It's 9 o'clock and it's 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Time for Khadijah and the White Guy. I'm Keith Washburn.
And I am Khadijah Hardaway.
All right. And our guest this morning is Dr. David Nelson, one of the founders of the Interfaith Council and currently still active in that, but not holding any position. David, good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you.
Well, David, we're going to open the show up right up with our topic. What is power and who has it? That's the question for you.
Well, I think that we all have power. And I think the original definition of power is the ability to create and nurture life and relationships. It doesn't have to do with hurting others, having power over others. It's the ability to create relationships with others. We have vital conversations every month, and the goal of those, the purpose is not to win an argument, but to win a friend and to advance civilization. That's power.
Wow, that's deep.
But it's what we all can do. It's what little infants and toddlers and teenagers and at all ages and in all walks of life we're trying to do is to build relationships and create possibilities.
You know, we talked a little bit about this and how some people may think that it's the military who has power or is the power or the system may be the power. But you went straight to the essence of life. Like, that's really deep. You know, it is.
Well, thank you. I didn't make that up. I heard it because I think that really is. Originally, power is the ability, the capacity to create life and nurture and relationships.
So let me ask you a question. How does power get displaced?
Well, power gets displaced because people begin to misuse their information, their knowledge, their resources, and somehow use it to divide. That's the opposition. That's the opposite of power. That's destruction. That's terrorism. When somebody hurts another person, that's terrorism. When somebody goes in and bombs or puts people down or holds people in slavery or keeps them oppressed, that's the opposite of power. Power unites and builds relationships.
So what would be the ultimate gain of someone misusing their power to divide? I mean, what's the purpose behind that, would you think? I mean, there's many, many conceptions or many ideals about that.
Yeah, you'd have to talk to people that are trying to do that to find the answer to that. I would think maybe to expand their influence, to impress people and to take over all kinds of things they can do, but they're certainly not advancing civilization when you divide people or hurt people or put people down. And if we're trying to advance civilization, let's do that. Let's build relationships.
Yeah, you know what? What I love about his definition is it's powerful.
Thank you, Keith.
It's more powerful than anything, I think. I mean, to be able to reproduce is huge because that's what
right.
we're put here on the earth for is reproducing. But how often do we often think of that as power, sheer power, you know, and that's what it is in its essence is sheer power, you know, just like love in its essence is sheer power.
Yeah,
to me,
it really is.
So all you men and women out there right now, you are powerful.
That's right.
Par excellence, right. According to David's definition.
Yeah.
But I wanted to interject this, if I could, is, you know, he's been involved in the Interfaith Council and one of the founders of the Interfaith Council, right, along with Vern. And you guys, you know, have dealt with religion for pretty much your whole life. And religion is often used to gain power. Let's talk about that just a little bit.
Well, I think religion has been misunderstood, certainly to call it something to separate people is really wrong. As I was talking to you earlier, I mentioned I would not want to live in a city where there's only one art place or one restaurant. People are diverse, and our cultures have placed us into different cultural communities. The original inhabitants of the land we're on right now had a very different understanding of religion or spirituality. They couldn't separate and say, this is religion, this is life. Native Americans, we're our relatives. The rocks and the trees and the earth is our relative. And much religion grows out of those cultural things, those cultural patterns. And what we're trying to do in the Greater Kansas City Interfaith Council is to listen and better understand each other, not to convert each other, but to better understand each other and to celebrate the gifts of pluralism.
Hmm. makes it so much more rich for everyone.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. What? I can't comprehend. I would not want my life without my brothers and sisters of other faiths. I can't comprehend my life without my beautiful sister Khadija. I can't comprehend my life without my brothers and sisters who are Hispanic and the people that I've met around the world. I would not want a life that's just boring people like me. I'm neat, but I'm not that neat. I want to know other people and other religions.
We're going with that. He's cool. No doubt about it.
All right. For me, I feel like I was born with power.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've always felt like there was a calling on me. So I always felt like there was some degree of power to me. But I often hear it, like, you're powerful. I often have feelings of certain things that happen to me. Like I was telling Dr. Nelson, I can stop a clock. You know, or stop a clock on my hand.
That's power.
But the thing of it is a lot of us possess those type of things, and we know to some degree we have power, but how do we really unleash that power to make it work for the benefit of the greater good, or building relationships, as you say?
You do what you're doing right here, Khadija. You're doing what
you're
doing.
Too, baby.
When we met at Eggs and Enlightenment, and you opened up to build a relationship with a white guy. I know that's the name of your show.
But you weren't the first white guy.
Oh, my. I am really jealous now. You mean David was the first white guy?
I wasn't the first white guy either. But that's power when you start crossing those exams. When somebody who's been homophobic all their life, who finally open up and say, oh, my gosh, I didn't know you were gay. I love you. I've built a relationship with you. Now I can overcome that disease, that distortion. That's power.
So do you think that we interchange power once we start communicating with each other? It kind of unlocks it and unleashes it. The more you learn about another individual and become intertwined in their culture, you become more powerful.
I certainly think so. And now I've got an ally. We all need allies and friends. I know I do. And I think we're more powerful together.
Well, I hope our listeners will really take that in. And you may disagree with it, but when you reach out to another person and understand more about them and become their brother or sister, it creates more power for both people.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I've heard this statement before that you're only three people from any person you want to meet in the world. I think that's powerful, and that's just the ultimate demonstration of power, is to be able to communicate with three different people. Say you wanted to meet the president.
Yep.
You can find three people that will connect you to the president, thereby be next to the president if you really wanted
to.
You know, or anybody that you wanted to see. It could be somebody miles or countries away, you know.
Yeah, let's do this. We're talking with Dr. David Nelson, who was one of the founders of the Interfaith Council, and we're taking your calls this morning, and Khadija's going to give us the phone number, aren't you, Khadija?
Sure, I can do that. 816-931-5534.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you this morning. If you have a comment about this, if you would like to ask a question of Dr. David Nelson, or if you have a definition of power that you would like to, you know, put forth, we'd love to hear from you this morning. Any of that, all of that, and even more. Just give that number one more time and call in.
816-931-5534. When you call in, state your name and what area of town you're calling from as well.
I want to share one more definition of power. Mahatma Gandhi once wrote, "Power is of two kinds. One is obtained by the fear of punishment, and the other by acts of love. Power based on love is 1,000 times more effective and permanent than the one derived from fear and punishment." War does not create power. It destroys it. Peacemaking creates power. Building relationships creates power.
So at the end of the day, the guy that holds up the flag is not holding power?
Not necessarily. It might be a symbol and a demonstration of it, but it's not necessarily creating it. Now, to hold it up with his brothers and sisters from different faiths, from different parts of town, from different countries, to build a stronger global community, that's power.
If we all have power, why do you suppose the condition of African Americans is as it is,
because
if we all possess power?
I kind of agree with the guy who wrote the book, Our Original Sin. Was adopting an economic system based on the oppression of a particular race. It was evil, it was wrong, and we have continued work to do to change that. First of all, we have to recognize it, that it was wrong. That wasn't power, that was distortion, that was terrorism, and we are dismantling it, and we still have work to do. But it is wrong. We have to recognize that.
As an African American, I do see myself as powerful.
I know
that. However, I do feel like that I have to redirect my power or think about a strategy in my power to combat this system. I often feel like sometimes, you know, your power can be bottled up because of the stress. But I also feel like that is the time when power explodes as well, you know. Do you see that there would be an explosion of power amongst people who have been oppressed?
Yes, I certainly understand that. And certainly early parts of the civil rights movement seem to be like that. Muhammad Ali, I think, was a great example of somebody who used his power to demonstrate. And somebody said that one of his most lasting effects is that he gave African-American men the ability to be who they were, to be powerful, without compromising and without becoming what white people wanted them to become because of his strong ego and because he was such a strong and powerful man. Sometimes people internalize oppression, just as they internalize oppression and internalize being the victim. And many African Americans, many gay people, internalize that homophobia, internalize racism, and begin to believe the lies of it. We have to tell the truth and help people to be liberated from that and form allies and friends to work with each other. And together, we can dismantle those wrongs of evils.
Some people would believe that, you know, in order to gain power, you have to affirm something. And you brought that to my attention when you mentioned Muhammad Ali. He often affirmed how beautiful he was, how strong he was, how do a person get to that point where they're affirming who they are so that in reality they become that person one day and that power is in them? Because, you know, you can have power and it sits dormant until you die,
yeah.
You know, but then there's ways to unleash that power. And I believe affirming who you are is a great way to start. How would you say would be a good way?
It's a beautiful way to start. I studied on the south side of Chicago, and I remember Jesse Jackson and some of the children's work that they were doing, you know, where they got these young black boys and girls, I am somebody, I am somebody, and continuing to say that. Personal thing, I am a wonderful human being. I will never be an oppressor. I'll never be a persecutor. I'll never be a bystander. I'm a wonderful human being. And we have to keep reminding ourselves of who we really are and not let someone else define us. We listen to others, but we define ourselves because the sacred, from whatever religious perspective you're talking about, Christianity is the one that I'm most familiar with, is that we are born in the likeness of God. We have the Christic within us. And Jesus really didn't come to rescue it from ourselves. Jesus came to show us ourselves and invite us to follow him and to live the Christic in us. Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism all have similar concepts that the sacred is within us, and we have to affirm that from the littlest infant to the elderly.
If you're listening and you would like to join the conversation, give us a call, 816-931-5534. Okay, so I just want to talk a little bit about God, because we've mentioned faith, and I'm a firm believer that God is power, like he's my source, you know. Some people believe that the universe is their source. Some people are totally atheists and don't believe any of that, you know, believe it just totally comes from them. Which I think all in essence is correct, you know, however you look at it, there is a greater power. How do we get people on one accord with so many cultural, so many religious, so many ethnic differences? How did that begin to solidify and we become together for one power, one great deed, one great common cause?
That's a great question, Khadija. First of all, I don't think it means that we all have to think, feel, worship, sing, pray, make love the same. I think we celebrate those gifts of diversity with the common theme of building a better global community. That means that we need to really listen to each other, not in order to convert each other or to tell them you're wrong or I'm right or vice versa. It's to better understand. That's why, as I mentioned earlier, the purpose of a vital conversation is not to win an argument, but to win a friend and to advance civilization. That quote, by the way, was Vern Barnett's, but I've borrowed it from him, and he's given me permission to use it, and I use it all the time.
Was that an endorsement?
We want to say hello to Vern Barnett.
I hope, let's get
a shout
Vern
out
is
this
listening.
Morning. Yeah. Khadija, go ahead.
So we've mentioned the word diversity. And this ability to show power. But it seems like the word diversity has died a little bit. You know, people using the word cultural competency. Does it make a difference when we change the way we look at our language, or should we kind of like increase with using what we've been using? Because to me, origin of words have power. And if you don't look at the origin of words, just like you don't look at the essence of where power come from, then often you're misusing your power as well, don't you think?
Or yes. Language is very important. The language we use creates our reality. The words we use create our reality. There is language that is appropriate and language that is not appropriate. And one of the abuses of power is to be told publicly that's not appropriate language to use, and then to go ahead and use it without apology.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our political candidates do that. I think real loving human beings are going to respect each other. And if you want to be called African American, that's what I want to call you. I'd rather call you by name, Khadija, rather than...
It's a very beautiful name.
Oh,
go
it's
ahead.
A very beautiful name.
I
with
would
a
toot
rich,
it all day.
with a rich, rich history. But you're right. Words create new life and energy. And words can hurt. Words can tear people apart. Words are very, very important, and that's one of the sources of power is words. In fact, within the Christian tradition and the Jewish tradition, it was the word that created the world. And it was, in Christianity, the word that became flesh and dwelled among us. The word and the words we use are incredibly important.
It's got me thinking about Dr. King, and I think he's one person that exemplified the use of his words.
Boy, did he ever.
And not only that, but in his consciousness and the decisions he made, he often thought about it with great care of how the power was going to be exposed. I think oftentimes we create in ourselves these blockages, you know, or what have you, because we get in situations and we don't commonly think about the power we possess and how the outcome can be different if we only think ourselves through the situation instead of reacting with emotion.
Yeah, that's so true.
I see it all the time, in my opinion, and some people may think I'm wrong when I say this, but when an African-American male is pulled over and he decides at that point that he's going to think his way through the stop or whether he's just going to think with emotions. At that point, he possessed power, which way the situation can or cannot go. Now, ultimately, he doesn't have total power, but he has enough control to say, me and my being, this is what I'm going to do. So I think we exercise a great deal of power. I think we have a caller.
Yeah, we sure do. Caller, you're on the air. If you would say your first name and what area of town you're calling in from.
Yeah, this is Anthony. I'm calling from the north side of Kansas City.
Good morning, Anthony.
How are you guys today?
Good.
Great.
Good. Glad you called.
Good. Interesting topic of conversation considering 2016, where we are with race relations and the lack of diversity in the so-called quote-unquote post-racial society. Interesting topic, especially the subject of power. And that power, your faith can give you a lot of power. But one of the things that seems interesting to me is that there is a huge fear factor. I think Eric Holder said it best in that a lot of people are cowards. They are afraid to stand up to those that are bigots, those that are racist, those that are against a person because of, say, whatever choices that they make in terms of their relationship with others. What would you say to the folks and to your audience regarding those that are fearful of standing up? And I've noticed this a lot. Fortunately, I've had the opportunity to attend various colleges and universities and situations where I'm the only African-American male in the room. And you can tell quite often, I'm able to read people in certain ways, is that I can tell whether or not, you know, there is a positive vibe there or a negative vibe. You know, when people looking at you, they greet you with a smile, they greet you with, you know, a mean look on their face, or they just don't acknowledge you at all. I have gotten over that fear of being in those situations because that's the hand that I've been dealt, in that it has been an opportunity for me to attend some of these colleges and universities and churches where there isn't a lot of diversity. But the one thing that I find to be still kind of shocking is that a lot of the white folks that I've seen and met in these colleges and churches, some of them are afraid to actually stand up to those that are not accepting. And I've never been able to stand that. When I was going to school, especially as a young person, I would see other kids on the playground. They would want to play with me, but if I was not accepted by their peers and the other white people in the clique, then they didn't want to have anything to do with me. So that's one thing. And I want to end with this. I might stay on if you want me to. But the other thing is the hypocrisy in the church. To me, that's the other thing that I find, and it's devastating to the church, is that the church is silent on so many things, especially when it comes to the issue of race, the issue of discrimination, and the condition that many poor people and people of color, they're still in that same situation today, and the church says nothing.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to let Dr. Nelson answer those. Thanks for calling in, Anthony.
Appreciate it. Anthony, thanks for
What can people do to... That's fearful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, Anthony has done some things. You have been in the non-dominant culture. You have gone in where you're the only black person in a group, and you've had the courage. Help us, coach us to do the same thing. Not all white people are inherently racist, but we need coaching, and sometimes our behavior is seen by others. But we're not intending that. You need to help coach us. You're right about the hypocrisy in the church. Our society has a lot of hypocrites as well. But keep working on building relationships. Keep working on identifying the fear. Is it real? And what's not real about it? We oftentimes fear those whom we don't know. And so the best thing to do is to get to know some people. If you're afraid of an African American, if you're afraid of a white person, get to know them. Don't build your tribes and go inward. Keep building bridges outward.
Oh, that's beautiful. And Anthony, thanks again for calling in. I wanted to also give this quote by Mahatma Gandhi, which is, you know, we must become the change we seek in the world.
Yes.
So that's the place to start. And it sounds like Anthony is doing that very thing. Mm-hmm. And we would implore all of our listeners is, you know, build bridges. What Dr. Nelson just said. Khadija?
Well, I want to respond to Anthony just from an African-American perspective. Most people, if they don't stand for anything, they'll fall for anything. The other thing is that what I know to be true about standing up against things that you are fearful is to meditate. And if there are African American men or women out there who feel like they want to stand up and speak out against the injustice that's happening to them, I suggest that you meditate. And you can do that in a small room, 15, 20 minutes, you know, at a time, and just sit quietly and meditate on a thought. And that's very helpful.
Yeah, we must all, in a way, visualize what kind of world we want to see. That's perhaps a starting point, even when you're in the face of adversity. And Muhammad Ali said, I said I was the greatest even before I knew I was the greatest.
Right. And then the other thing is I want to encourage other people, if you have heard about our forum, Real Conversations on Race Diversity. It is the second Thursday of the month, which will be the 14th of July this month, in the Annex Room from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. We have an extended conversation, and some of these topics that you were referring to come up, and we can address them at that time, and we can help influence people to use their power and not be so fearful.
Absolutely. So I wanted to ask Dr. Nelson a question. And it really relates to religion. Religion is one of the primary ways that we separate ourselves. And I love what you said earlier is it's great to have, you know, your own religion and your own practices and so forth, but also to embrace your brothers and sisters who have different practices than you. But why is it that people want to always separate? They always seem to want to build a wall and say, well, that is, you know, those, the gays, you know, I'm not going to associate with those folks, or I'm not going to associate with African Americans, or, you know, whatever it might be. Why is it that we seem to have that in our genes or something?
You know, Keith, I want to challenge that a little bit, because I think
good.
I think our DNA longs to be connected to each other. I think we are socially conditioned to separate. Mm-hmm. For a number of years, there was a wonderful set of billboards as you came into the city. I lived north of the river, and I remember one of them, and it was a picture of about six beautiful little naked babies, and they were all different colors, and the caption was, "No one is born a bigot." We have to be conditioned to not trust each other. I was born, the first arms that welcomed me into the world was an African-American nurse in Algona, Iowa, who I found out later delivered most of the babies. The doctor, the white doctor, always signed the birth certificate, but it was this African-American nurse. She and I were as close and as intimate as I was with my mother. I had to be taught that she is different. And because she is different, she's somebody that I can love. Not because she is different, she is somebody I can hate. Now, I know, Keith, that it appears that we're trying to tear that apart, but I don't think that's in our DNA. I think in our inherent nature is to be attracted to that which is different, to that which is unique, to that which is going to open up new adventures. That's why I like to travel. I go to other countries. It's not because I want them to become like me or for me to become like them. It's because they're different. And I think that's attractive, not something to be afraid of.
So it's in our DNA then to trust, and it's the things we are taught by other people, and maybe even by political candidates who espouse fear-based mentality and that sort of thing. That's
collective
what makes people fearful.
Collective experiences changes that trust.
Yes.
I wanted to give a reference to the church, and I would say for a lot of churches is that they are receiving government supplements. And sometimes when you receive large supplements, you can't help as the way you want to help. The other thing is that in religion, you find a set of disciplines. And oftentimes, if that discipline doesn't flow in your channel, you know, in your body easily, then that's when a divide happens. And it could be anything that sparks it, from the hem of the skirt to whether you're going to drink real wine at, you know, when you go to take your communion. It could be something as simple as that will mess up the discourse in a discipline for an individual that would make them say, I don't want to,
Participate. And actually, and I think Anthony sort of
break off.
Yes, exactly. Anthony made the comment, like, you know, and he said with white people, and the same could be said of people of color, which is, you know, when your friends don't accept that you have friends that are a different color than you are, different race, different ethnicity, different religion or whatever, sometimes we conform to that instead of pushing back and saying, well, that's the way I roll. I accept everyone.
Right.
You know, we are tempted to let our friends persuade us.
Well, I think there's a certain bit of I wouldn't necessarily call it morale, but there's a certain bit of individual conflict when people, for instance, in the Islamic community, you're not even supposed to show your ankles, you know. But American culture, some people would say, well, I can't go to work like that, you know, and they would pull the dress hem up. And thereby, you have a divide. Now you have one mosque where the dress hem is a little bit up and one is down, or, you know, their face may be covered. And it's just that simple thing that divides them. However, their beliefs are still the same.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
You know, my dad took me for a walk the night before I was ordained. And one of the most important things he said to me, and I think we all have a parent at one point that says this, choose your fights carefully. There are some things that are worth fighting for. There are even a few things worth dying for. There is nothing worth killing for. There is nothing worth destroying relationships. I think we can really use our power to create a better Kansas City, a better Missouri-Kansas relationship, a better world, and be global thinkers and global citizens.
You think we can use our power to destroy the invisible line going down Troost?
I think we can build a bridge across that and keep going over it.
Oh, I love it. That's
I love
a
people on
vision.
Both sides of Troost. I can't imagine my life without people on both sides of Troost.
Well, we want to thank our guest, Dr. David Nelson.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
It's wonderful. I want to thank my co-host, Khadija Hardaway. Great as always, my dear.
Toot, toot, Beth.
And, of course, the white girl has been with us this morning, Beth Pike, helping us out answering the phones. We really appreciate her help as always. Mike Murphy and all the rest of the gang here at KKFI. Here is Stevie Wonder to end it all this morning, and we'll see you next week at 9 o'clock on Thursday, Khadija and the White Guy. Heaven help the black.